Hello everybody, this is James in what's going to be very much of an experiment. I'm recording a commentary of an episode, which means I'm watching it on television and talking to you over the top of it and recording my comments. So I hope this is going to work. It's going to be completely unedited, so you'll get all my mistakes and all my fluffs and probably some of my coughs and splutters as well. This particular episode is the season 8 opener, Ring Them Bells, and you may remember that Tony and I spoke about Ring Them Bells, what must be over a year or so ago now, during our first episode. But of course that wasn't whilst we were watching an episode live. So season 8, which was the penultimate episode, there you are, there's my first fluff, is the penultimate series throughout the entire Dad's Army run. So the characters and the actors had grown into the characters quite well by now. So this opening scene that you may be able to hear just part of in the background, depending on how good the mic is where everyone in the platoon is just having a chat prior to parade. And to be honest with you, I really quite enjoy these scenes because some of the best scenes, I think, in Dad's Army are those where you just see the characters sitting around talking to each other. There may not even necessarily be a particularly strong plot point to drive the story forward in these scenes. It just kind of gives a feeling that these characters are really well known to each other, and it's something I really enjoy. We've now moved into the office, and Mannerin, an incredibly pompous man or character anyway. Pompous seems to be the very first word most people use to describe Mannerin. Is preening himself, really, in the mirror so that he can come across the best possible way. Now, one of the things I'm going to try and not do, which is what I think I've just done, is actually describe what's happening on screen, because, of course, you're probably very familiar with these episodes, so I'm not going to sit there and describe them. Hopefully the idea is that you can watch the episode at the same time as you hear this commentary, so perhaps you can run them both at the same time. And hopefully my comments are reasonably interesting. This is a traditional scene, really, within Dad's Army. Mannerin just sitting in his office with Wilson the other side. And I think it's probably true with the later episodes where you can just kind of spy almost or view these conversations between the two main characters and feel that they do really know each other very, very well, because both the actors seem completely at ease in portraying their characters, and I think that works really well. Mannerin playing up here a little bit to a very macho image that he would quite like people to view him with, saying that he's going to have absolutely no makeup at all, or I think he calls it muck on his face or something along those lines. Pike's contribution here, I think, is excellent, and I think Pike is extremely strong throughout this episode. His character is certainly the most funny element to me. Funny thing is, Mannerin is just as excited about appearing in this Home Guard film as Pike is. The difference being is that Pike is young and doesn't have to try and hide it, whereas Mannerin, of course, wants to come across professional and almost quite ambivalent, really, to what's going on. And just very quickly there, you caught our very first glimpse of the two actors who represent the film company. We've got John Barden, who has got a bit of a history with Dad's Army, although this is the episode where he plays the most prominent part. John also appeared as Private Walker in the original stage play that toured it started off in the West End of London and then toured the whole country, and so he has quite an association with the show. I believe he also understudied someone for that particular role. I can't quite remember which it was now. And of course the other character, Queenie, who obviously takes a little bit of a liking to Wilson's character, and Wilson and Pike, when Wilson and Pike come into the hall, there she immediately notices the two. And we have the Colonel here, of course, in this scene, who appeared in a number of different episodes in the second half, really, of the run of Dad's Army. Robert Ralgen, or Ralgen, I can't remember how to say his name. And he became a reasonably regular officer feature in the late episodes, whereas in the early episodes, whenever there needed to be a token officer in the scenes, it varied. I think Michael Knowles played about three or four different officers, well, exactly the same portrayal, in my view. But yeah, he did. Michael Knowles did seem to feature throughout a number of different episodes in Dad's Army. There's very never the same character twice. Of course, one of the good things about this scene here is Mannerin's absolute horror at being told he has to play Nazis, and that's when I think that compounded with the fact that he can't be the officer because there isn't a uniform that fits him, completely turns him off the idea, and he handles his disappointment by feigning complete indifference. There's a few of those lines there where Fraser just throws in very short lines sometimes, and just commenting that he couldn't make a worse hash of being a German officer than he does of a British officer. And I like John Lorry's, well, I like Fraser. I like John Lorry's delivery of the lines. I think he's excellent. Arthur Lowe doing some great acting there without actually saying anything, just reacting to what character Queenie is saying, particularly when she says he's got girl's feet. So I suppose this is a slightly different interpretation of a fairly standard opening to a Dad's Army episode. Most episodes open with a parade, and of course we've just got the three different characters thrown into the mix here. It's one of the very few times you actually see one of Mannering's superior officers not quite chastise Mannerin, but he does tell him not to be difficult. And of course, Wilson and Pike are the two people that Mannerin almost certainly wouldn't want to be chosen as officers, and just encourages his indifference, really. This is the first scene we see the platoon dressed in German uniforms, which is quite a memorable scene for me, or quite a memorable sight, just seeing them all dressed as Nazis. And if you look at the way Jones, Fraser, and Godfrey hold themselves when they're wearing German officer uniforms, it's quite different to how they normally stand. John Lorry being cross as well, and doing a rather strange interpretation of an eagle, or an impression of an eagle. It's somewhat unorthodox and probably shouldn't be funny, and but it is, or it is to me at least, certainly. Jones coming out with one of his long stories, which I don't like very much, I have to say. There are a couple that are hilarious, but as regular listeners will know, Jones is not my favourite character. The thing that I enjoy most about Jones's speeches these days is actually comparing what Clive Dunn says with what's in the scripts, and the two. It, put it this way: if they were plot lines, there were two separate plot lines on a piece of graph paper, they wouldn't match, or they wouldn't overlay each other very much. We've got Wilson and Pike there coming in as German officers. Pike just pops a monocle in his eye, and Ian Lavender does this so well. So well. You just get the impression that Pike is having an absolutely fantastic time. Which, of course, he is. And even Wilson feels quite small. Well, he says he feels quite smart. And whereas Menuhin, of course, if he was forced to wear a German officer's uniform, would not feel particularly empowered, or he would feel extremely upset at not being as patriotic as he would like to be, doesn't cross Wilson's mind in the slightest. He has no real compulsion, or no real strong feelings about wearing a German officer's uniform, and he's even encouraged by Pike to strut and swagger, which of course you couldn't have done with any other character really in the platoon. It would have had to have been Wilson doing his goose-stepping. And maybe somewhat obvious and a bit predictable, Mannering walks straight in on him. Ian Lavender's German accent also makes me smile. Wilson almost rubs it in there. He's a line of dialogue where he says these uniforms suit any figure. Clearly, they don't have a uniform that fits Mannering. And Pike goes to join Mannering and Wilson at the head of the lineup, obviously because he believes he's an officer. I think it's funny a couple of times, but that joke is laboured a few times throughout this episode, and this is just the first time it happens. And yeah, it's mildly amusing, but it's a shame that it's rehashed again and again. And yet again, Ian Lavender's reacting to Mannering's threat to send him home. Just perfect. And here we get Jones almost articulates how uncomfortable he feels in a German officer's uniform, and he articulates Mannering's feelings. But of course, Mannering can't say that. One, because he's not wearing a uniform, and two, because he didn't want to be seen to go against the colonel's instructions. But Jones, obviously being a junior member of the platoon, is quite able to say that he doesn't want to look like a German. And the whole premise of the episode there, articulated in Pike's one line, how do people know that we're not real Germans? And here we are, we've now switched to our first bit of location shooting, and we've got the van being driven. I'm assuming this is at Stanta, which is the Ministry of Defence land, or owns land. Of course, Thetford's having the Ministry of Defence land was absolutely ideal to the production team, and it was Harold Snowds who found not only Thetford but all of this grounds surrounding Thetford as well. And of course, the whole crew weren't disturbed because it was private land, and there was miles of it as well. I mean, it's still owned by the Ministry of Defence, and they've still got big signs that say "Don't go," you know, "No, don't go on this land. It's being used by the Ministry of Defence." And I have to admit, I've been tempted just to go on and drive, because you can quite easily get onto these roads that Ministry of Defence own in Thetford. But I've always been terrified that there might be some kind of mortar shell blow me up or something, which is it makes me wonder how many Dad's Army fans with a few more guts than me have been braver. John Barden, obviously been engaged to do a little bit of location shooting as well as the studio shooting, which was done in London. Quite a few references to famous characters, or famous characters, famous actors here. Jack Buchanan is used a couple of times. One Queenie, the character of Queenie, says Wilson looks like him, and as it turns out, Jack Buchanan is playing the character that Wilson is playing. Although, Jack Buchanan playing a Nazi officer during wartime, not so sure. Interesting seeing, I mean, how different John Barden is to obviously his recent role in EastEnders, he plays Jim Branning, a much older character, and the character in EastEnders has just had a stroke, and I believe the actor, I believe John Barden has too, but he did make a return to EastEnders recently. Not that I watch it, I have to make very, very clear. My wife watches it, and I am forced to watch it. Well. All right, I do quite enjoy it. There's Pike standing up on top of the van, sticking his arms up in Heil Hitler salutes. Now, it always makes me wonder how Mannerin knows that's what Pike's doing before he gets out of the van and stops, because he can't see the shadow. Anyway, now we're up against the Six Bells pub, which is leading up to one of the most famous lines throughout the entire run of Dad's Army. I've been to the Six Bells pub a couple of times now, twice just when we were doing tours of Dad's Army locations, and took a couple of photographs there, and another time when I interviewed the now landlord of the Six Bells, who I don't think is particularly aware a great deal about the history of Dad's Army and he's the pub that he now oversees, but he's extremely keen on making certain and publicising the connection the show has with a pub. This is a very different location now to how it was when it was filmed, and when the van drove in shots when this particular scene opens. It now, if it was to be filmed today, it would now be driving in from the pub's car park, and there isn't actually a road, so I don't know whether that's changed now or whether they did just drive the van from the car park back when this was originally filmed. And there's a slight blooper here that people, well, some people notice. It's very well known amongst Dad's Army circles, so you probably are aware of this. But obviously, when Pike walks into the pub from the external shot, he's followed in by a different character. And when it cuts to the inside of the pub, you've got somebody else. So obviously, there's a little bit of discontinuity there. Jack Haig here plays the landlord of the Six Bells, who bears absolutely no resemblance to Paul, who's the current landlord there. Indeed, the whole of the inside of this pub, this set, has absolutely no resemblance to the inside of the pub. The real, genuine Six Bells, completely different. In fact, if you look at the pub on the outside from the external shot when the van comes up, you could then compare it to how the set is on the inside. You can see that it's completely and utterly different. The entrance is all wrong. The size of the studio inside is wrong, but I suppose you're not supposed to notice these things. Of course, I've just been talking over the line that I was talking about before, is where Pike asks for 16 chandies mit die ginger beer and terrifies the landlords as he believes they're real Nazis. And it's quite funny actually, because he goes back, and obviously this barmaid, I've forgotten her name now, Doris, I think, but she actually just says they're not Nazis, they're old men. And Jack Haig obviously pushes his point of view across. And later on, when they're all outside the pub, Doris is obviously bought his theory, and the funny thing was that she was right to start with, of course. It's also quite clever that the only person Jack Haig's landlord ever speaks to is Pike, who of course is doing German accent, because he's still playing. Here we have Mannering walking directly into the pub. Excuse me. See, Mannering has got his work cut out here, but I have to admit, when he sits there and tries to explain the circumstances to Jack Haig's character, you know, he doesn't come across as particularly convincing. You know, I don't need to tell you, it's nothing to worry about, they're not real Germans, and it's quite clear that the landlord is not convinced. I love these scenes. I love the scenes with Jack Haig in. I just think he's a cut above just a usual actor that they would plonk into that role. It is a small part, but he attacks it with vigour, and it just seems to work really well. This is the scene I was telling you about, or I mentioned beforehand, where Doris is telling the policeman here that they're Quislings and Germans. And of course, this is very accurate as well. A little bit of a policeman who's clearly not that confident is a special constable, and that's what would have been quite usual within a small town during wartime, rather than, you know, the kind of policeman that you would expect to be around today. Although they did find this policeman rather quickly. I think this scene also shows the solidarity almost that was shown by people during World War II. You've got a relatively high average age of the people who are supposed to be residents of this town, and the minute they get the whiff of a possibility of a Quisling or a Nazi sympathiser, they're all out together and they're all bashing the van, and yeah, sure, it's played for comedic effect. But that was the kind of attitude people had during the wartime. Well, so I understand. I wasn't alive at the time myself. And I think that's reflected really well in the series in many episodes. This, of course, being the first scene with the vicar, Hodges and the verger arguing, of course, about the booking of the hall. Which I have to admit, that topic is discussed so frequently whenever they try to bring these characters into an episode. It would have been good to have a different premise to introduce them into a scene once in a while. This is Jack Haig's final scene on the phone to Hodges. And Pertwee there doing fantastic reaction humour to presumably someone reading Jack Haig's lines into the studio. And warn England, Jack Haig's final lines in this episode. I always enjoy Hodges' contribution into these episodes. There are times when it feels like that, you know, he's just given some stock lines to say. Obviously, he's a bit part character as opposed to a regular member of the platoon. But I do think Big Pertwee, he does attack his lines usually with quite a bit of relish. Very physical as well. He's just manhandled both Frank Williams and Edward Sinclair out of the office. Now this part of the episode is outside, well, the external scenes to St Aldham's Church. I've actually been to as well, and yeah, you can see in the windows of that building, they've got some brown tape across the windows. That probably is the only dressing that building had. Today, it's a working school. And if you can just walk past the wall, which you can see behind Mannering, and there very, very little has changed at all. And this building was used a number of times for the external scenes to the church hall. Now, they're running round the side of the church, I understand, is a different location, and I could be wrong here, and I'm sure people will email me if I am, but the side of that, I believe, was a church that was filmed very close to the pageant scene in Knights of Madness, which is another episode in a different series. I think it's the next series, the final series. And here we are, back inside again in a studio. Back in the main hall, it is where they hear the church bells, which of course are being rung by Hodges, the vicar, and the verger, who believe it's a real invasion. And the climax of this episode really is what we're moving into now. It's the panic that has been gradually building. The tempo of this episode gradually builds in pace. And of course, you've now got the usual panic, really, of a problem having to be rectified at the end of the problem, at the end of the episode. It's quite interesting seeing just the three characters here: the Verger, Hodges, and the Verger, Hodges, and the Vicar. Ringing the bells. I mean, later on, in a few seconds, you'll see them halfway up the clock tower after they're trying to hide when they believe the Nazis are trying to chase them and stop them ringing the bells. And you can clearly see the wires that are used to suspend them. So, interesting ending again. Feels a little protracted to me, particularly when Mannering's asking Jones to take a note. Perhaps a little bit of padding, you never know. It might just be me not quite appreciating the joke or the gag. They get in a joke about Fraser and money, which of course builds up all the way throughout Dad's Army, right up and through to a Fraser's the Fraser's episode, A Miser's Hoard. Wilson, of course, comes straight through. The church hall, so they don't have to blow the lock off after all. And if you look, oh, John Le Mesurier, just when he says there's no one there, clearly looks up, so he would have seen those three characters being dangled by wires, and also not very convincingly hanging on to the ropes of the bells with their elbows bent. So that would have required a tremendous amount of strength to hang on like that, had, you know, in real life, had they not been suspended by cables. And Pike, of course, having spoken to Command or GHQ and told them it's a false alarm, completely and utterly landed Mannering in it. And of course, we finished the episode here with Mannering looking at Pike and uttering the famous words, "You stupid boy." One of my favourite episodes, Ring Them Bells, thoroughly enjoyed it. It's actually quite difficult recording yourself, having no one to discuss it with. So perhaps if I do this again, I may well have somebody else to chat alongside, and hopefully it may be a little bit more interesting. Let me know whether you think this experiment has worked, whether you'd like to hear further commentaries, and if you would, tell me which episode you'd like me to talk about. All that remains for me to say is thank you very much for tuning in. The way you get in touch with me is by emailing, and that's james@dadsarmypodcast.com. Thanks very much, and I hope to speak to you very soon.